Recording and say, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Zork Review Board meeting for November 18th, 2021. The file that we're looking at today is Z0439-21, a proposed zoning change to a historic landmark site in Clackamas County. I'm Anthony Reeder, a senior planner with the county, part of my portfolio is historic review. And I will maybe hand it off to our historic review board members to introduce themselves, and then we'll go from there. So, Madam Chairwoman.
I'm Amanda Gresson. I'm an architect that lives in Clackamas County and in the Jennings Lodge area, and I've been with the board for a couple of years now. I should probably start adding it up. That's my story. Michael, would you like to go next?
Yeah, just tag whoever next.
My name's Mike Schmier. I've been on the historic review board for maybe a year, but we've really only in that amount of time because of COVID, and things being pretty slow historically, we've only met this might be the fourth time, maybe only the third, very few. I live in Oak Grove on Oldfield Road. I'm the chairman of the Oak Lodge History Detectives. I'm also on the Concord Task Force. That's Concord School back there. I'm also a member of the Clackamas County Historical Society, the Milwaukee Historical Society, the Oregon Historical Society, and I forget all the rest. But that's kind of my background. And I was also formerly on the Oak Grove Community Council, and Anthony had to deal with me when I would respond to some of those applications. The end.
Always very constructive and helpful.
Yes, definitely. You're a wonderful resource. And then we have Megan. Megan, would you share a little bit about yourself?
Hello, everybody. My name is Megan Burt. I live in Stafford in a home that's on the historic register for the county. And I don't have as much claim to fame as the other members of our group here. I worked as the education coordinator at the end of the Oregon Trail Interpretive Center for 7 years, and that's when I learned a lot about Oregon's history. And I'm a history teacher, and this is my first year on the board. That's about all.
Excellent. Thank you. And then it looks like we have Howard, too. Howard, can you share a little bit about yourself? And you are on mute right now.
Now it says mute.
There we go.
There you go.
Oh. All right.
Hey.
I live in Moala. Yeah, was in instruction for 30 years. I retired and come over to Malawi, and I play golf and sell real estate. That's about what I do.
Great. So those are our board members who are in attendance. Would the applicants team just like to do some quick introductions so we know who all we're speaking with over on that side of the Zoom room?
Sure. I'm Marie Holliday with AKS Engineering, and I'm consulting on behalf of the property owners, Eno and Eno Mian here. I think he's the only one here tonight.
And I'm John Rogas, the civil engineer for the project.
I'm Chris Cannell.
Hi, Chris.
Nice to see you all.
Good to see you.
And then we also have Eno, who is one of the property owners, joining us as well. As well as some, it looks like there's also some members of the public who have joined us in attendee mode. And so as we move into the public comment period, there'll be kind of added in for their opportunity to comment and offer some input on the application and then move kind of back to the attendee status. So, but they are able to kind of watch and observe. And then we'll bring them in for comment period. So, gosh, it's been so long, I forget the order we do things in. unless there are any kind of ex parte communications or anything that we need to address or kind of resolve early on, if it's agreeable, I might go through an overview of the application before us.
Well, I think you have to read the minutes from the last meeting.
Ah.
Just kidding.
Just kidding. Like, what?
I was like, oh, really?
Well, you brought up the bylaws. So.
I did. The minutes are kept in audio recording form.
Good. There you go. They're available.
We can listen to them if you want.
No, thanks.
No, thank you. So let me go ahead and share my screen. I'm going to give a kind of brief PowerPoint overview of the... Everyone seeing that? Can I get like a thumbs up for seeing it?
Great. Thumbs up.
Great. So what is before us today is the proposed removal of the historic preservation overlay from a property near Beaver Creek. File number is ZO43921-Z. Z for zoning. Subject property is located here, right at Beaver Creek Road in South Wilson. Hamlet of Beaver Creek is here to the south. City of Oregon City is up here to the north. The property is known in our inventory of designated sites as the Christian Neralt Farm. It was originally designated in the early 1990s. Largely on the value of its vernacular style farmhouse and a notable agricultural water tower, there was and is an additional cellar building on the site, and the nomination does make reference to that collection of agricultural buildings in addition to their merit individually. It was also identified for its association with the broad patterns of Clackamas County's agricultural history, although in that inventory and review was not specifically identified as being related to a person or persons notable in Clackamas County history. At that time, it was evaluated on the 106-point scale and scored 41 points in the assessment at that time. I just want to note that 40 is the minimum number to qualify as Clackamas County Historic Landmark. Over the intervening years, there has been some deterioration of the site, which we'll look at in a little bit more detail here in a moment. I wanted to pause for a moment here to look at the site plan versus the aerial. So this is the site plan showing the house. Interesting that the site plan drawing shows the house not as a cross-gabled house, which I thought was an interesting, surprising oversight, because it's kind of one of the more notable features of it is that it has that different kind of that plan to it. But it's not really germane, so it kind of caught my eye as being surprising. The cellar building to the rear, which is still in existence, and then the water tower, which is partially, it's haven't collapsed. This garage that was shown here is no longer on site. I take a moment and look at some of the site photographs. So this is the farmhouse from the front. The building itself seems to be more or less in place and intact in terms of its form. There has been some pretty significant deterioration. Most if not all of the windows have been smashed out. I couldn't really speak to the cause of that, but they're not there anymore. The front porch obviously has deteriorated and either been pulled or fallen off. The means by which it came off the building, unfortunately, or for better or worse, is not really germane to just to the fact that it's not there anymore.
Thank you.
Howard, could you please mute your screen or yourself? Thank you.
Say that again.
Could you please mute yourself? We could hear.
I'm sorry. I'm done.
No worries.
No worries. So as I mentioned, the front porch in some fashion has become detached and collapsed from the house. We don't necessarily know whether it deteriorated and fell off or was pulled off. And for our purposes, it doesn't necessarily matter, how it came to be detached, other than to say that it has deteriorated and is no longer there. You can note some additional deterioration right here to that bay window. On the whole, the form of the building is intact, just some pretty significant damage and deterioration from neglect over the years.
Anthony, can I ask a question?
Please.
I wasn't able to hear what you said was missing from the site plan or site map.
Sure.
Could you repeat that? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, not a problem at all. So in the nomination, there were three structures specifically identified in the nomination. And those were the house itself and the water tower as kind of having the most significance, I think. They're also identified was the cellar building. And all three of those buildings in some, or three of those structures, I should say, are still on site in some form or fashion. They'll all have certainly deteriorated and weathered and fallen to some neglect over the years. The one that is not currently on site is this garage that's shown on the site plan up here. And that garage, I don't believe it was specifically identified as having kind of a historic value in the nomination, but it was shown on the site plan. I just wanted to basically say, you know, if I had to speculate, and this is a little bit of a speculation, this garage, it's my cursor is here. You see the cursor?
Yes.
Cool. May have been right about here. It looks like there may have been a structure just based on the pattern of the vegetation here. I'm guessing that's the footprint of where that garage used to be. That's the one that is there at all.
And the literature said that the garage was probably added later than the original dwelling.
Right. And so the significance of it is questionable. Anyway. So, again, house is seen significantly better days. Now the water tower, I did want to spend a little bit of time on this. The water tower currently is about approximately 2 stories tall. It would have previously been 3.5 stories tall. There was a full another module that I can show a historic photograph of, that has essentially fallen or has deteriorated away. This shingle siding that you see on the rear would have covered the structure as a whole. You can see on the front how that has been either removed or deteriorated over time. As I mentioned, the applicant is proposing the removal of the historic preservation overlay from the site based on the loss of the contributing resources and deterioration of the structures on site, as well as changes to the surrounding land uses. I will note, go back to the aerial, there is starting to, over the years, has been the development of additional kind of suburban or exurban style residential development around. So when I talk about changes to the land uses of the surrounding area, that is to what I refer. Several public comments have been received. Generally speaking, they advocate for the retention of the overlay zone on the subject property and against future development with either dense residential or commercial buildings. I want to pause on that because and make sure that we stay focused on the issue before us in this meeting. So whatever future development might be contemplated for the site this evening is well outside of our domain. So really our conversation this evening is centered on the historic resources and historic attributes of the site and whether there is sufficient grounds to continue protecting the site with the overlay zone. All the public comments received in advance of today were provided to the historic review board members with the staff memo and recommendation. And some of you may have noticed that there was a subsequent packet this evening of materials that came. Those were submitted by public members of the public who are intending to speak today and wanted to have their either remarks or illustrative images held for the public record or sent ahead of time to be displayed on screen as they were speaking. So based on my analysis of the site as it exists today, I believe that based on the standards, the same standards that were applied to it when it was originally nominated, the site today would score 32 points, more than somewhat diminished from the 41 that it did score previously. Those are certainly up for discussion and debate. So it shall be that. But that was kind of my assessment. Now you'll note that the applicant also provided their own assessment. A member of the public provided their own assessment. And so I'm anticipating some robust conversation around those standards.
You might reiterate that in order to get historic landmark designation, the minimum required is 40 points out of what, 106, I think?
That's a really good point, Mike. Thanks. Yes. So let me actually share a different screen here for a moment, if I may. So in our zoning and development ordinance, the zoning criteria for the historic preservation overlay that's not the right screen. I need to share the screen that has section 707 on it. Okay, so in 707.02b, there are two pathways to become a Clackamas County Historic Landmark. One is by listing to the National Register of Historic Places. That's an automatic on-ramp. You're on the National Register, you meet the standard automatically to be a Clackamas County Historic Landmark. That's not the case with this property. This property went through the more common pathway in Clackamas County, which is rating on a 106-point scale, a minimum, and a property must score a minimum of 40 points on the criteria that follow here to be considered for landmark status. I would note again that when the site was originally nominated, it scored 41 points. So it was relatively close to that threshold from the beginning. And as I mentioned before, the applicant, a member of the public, as well as myself as the representative of the planning division, have put forward different potential scores for the site. And that, I think, forms the central point of our conversation this evening. That is actually the end of my presentation. I'm happy to go through in some detail the scores and the ratings that I kind of did for each of the elements of the property. But I think, Mary, I would pause here and take any questions from the Historic Review Board members so far.
All right. Well, I guess should we start with where should we start with comments, everybody?
Well, I guess I can start, Amanda. I read all of the staff's review and recommendations, and staff's scoring of, wasn't it 32, Anthony?
It was.
And I understand that it originally got 41 points on a scale of 106. I looked at all the pictures. I read all the comments made by the folks that sent in their own responses. I have to say, and I wrote her name down, Elizabeth Lindsay, I believe, wrote in probably the best response of anybody I've ever seen throughout my few years of doing this sort of thing. I could not have written her response better myself, and I've written a few of them. So my hat is off to Lindsay, Elizabeth Lindsay, for that response. That was a thorough review. Mm-hmm. And I'm sympathetic and empathetic to the vast majority of what was said. On the same token, the Clackamas County Historic Review Board is bound by ZDO 707, the preservation ordinance that was written years ago, and it has very specific language in it. And it, although the property in question, the structures and everything, in my opinion, are historic, the score that it received in 1990 of 41 was barely exceeded the minimum. And since that time, there's been a lot of deterioration to the structures. I know an issue was raised about the front porch, whether it fell down or was, I'll use the word sabotage, but be that as it may, it's down. The windows aren't, I don't think, are original. I wish Howard was here, or
Paul.
He's the window expert. But
windows are the eyes of the soul. There we go.
Yeah.
That's right.
And so there's deterioration to the main house, and there's significant deterioration to the water tower. I love those old water towers. I'm a preservationist at heart. I just hate seeing these places deteriorate. But the water tower is deteriorated. The cellar on the back, there was a lot of discussion in Elizabeth's response about that cellar not being the way it was depicted in the by the applicants. But be that as it may, it's deteriorated some. The nuts and bolts of it are that this property owner is not the original property owner that originally nominated it back in 1990. I checked on that. This is somebody new. The property has not been well maintained. The pride in the property is not apparent. They haven't got the same, stewardship of the historic nature of the property that it's entitled to. And I'm leaning toward recommending that the overlay be removed.
So certainly I'd be happy to continue discussing amongst ourselves. Before we get too far into the getting towards a recommendation or kind of formulating, before opinions start hardening and ossifying and kind of moving in the direction of a recommendation, I do want to make sure that both the applicant and members of the public who are in attendance have an opportunity to kind of present their thinking on it. I think it's really important that, you know, obviously at least four folks in the audience who took time out of the evening, just like all of us did, to be heard. I think that's an important aspect of this proceeding. So I don't want to step on anyone's toes in terms of halting our conversation, but if I might ask that we pause for a moment, let the applicant maybe make any kind of, if they want to focus our attention on anything or raise any additional points, and then also get to the public comments before we kind of go into a more closed session to discuss with the board members amongst themselves.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Great.
Thanks, Anthony. I'll go ahead and share my screen here. It said my screen sharing was disabled.
Hold on. Try now.
Perfect. All right, so up for your consideration this evening again is the historic overlay removal. The original county land use file that designated this site was 1284-90-Z, and that's all the information that was included in the applicant's submittal. My name is Marie Holliday, and I'm with AKS Engineering and Forestry, consulting on behalf of the property owners Eno and Cornell Mann. Anthony had a pretty thorough presentation, so I'll stay brief here. You can see the property here. It's generally located north of Wilson Road, east of Highway 213, south of Henry C. Road, and west of South Ferguson Road. You can see the structures are located here in the northwestern corner of the site and generally surrounded by smaller lots. This application is sort of a two-step process. Staff recommended removal of the overlay. And so tonight, the Historic Review Board has the opportunity to provide a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners, who will make the decision at a future meeting. This slide describes the designation review in the original case file. Again, that's 1284-90-Z. And so as you can see, there's three categories there. Anthony sort of went over those from Section 707. So those are architectural, environmental, and historical significance. So this chart here kind of shows the original designation was scored a 41 out of 106 points, where again, 40 was the minimum. So like you guys discussed, that barely satisfied the minimum threshold. Based on county records, the original categories and determinations were not described and inventoried individually. In 1990, so as you read through that case file language that was submitted with the application, it doesn't actually go through each category listed. So it makes it a bit difficult to understand the exact reasons for the original nomination. And county staff did find in their staff report that the site no longer meets the requisite criteria. Here's the photo evidence of the house there in the case file. This is the only photo evidence of the site that we had to compare the existing home to. Currently, the house does not possess a high quality of craftsman details and contains few of the elements of the original assessment. As you can see down there below highlighted on the screen, there was certain decorative features that no longer appear to be visible on the house, such as those double hung sash windows, ornate paneling. The glazed front door has since been replaced, and the porch and projecting bay window are collapsed. As Anthony mentioned, the original property owners of the site don't appear to be of historical significance to the area. And so essentially, the house was an example of vernacular style dwelling at the time, but it doesn't appear to be so today. Here's a photo of the water tower. So as Anthony mentioned before, it did have a third top story that no longer exists today. In 1990, the county found the water tower to be in poor condition. As you can see on the bottom of the screen, it's rated as poor. And it stands in much worse shape today if you actually go out on site. The original functions are significantly impaired. The original windmill is no longer existing. And then as far as the other structures on site are, the county's original assessment, there was nothing particularly unique about them. The case file didn't go into much detail. And again, the nominations weren't scored individually, which made it hard to kind of assess what was important about those structures. At that time, the buildings were and still continue today to be in disrepair. You can see here this highlighted portion. The garage was severely dilapidated. And there was actually no image of it available upon the 1990 assessment. The case file was blank. Here's some additional photos of the home. So Anthony kind of went through those already. As you can see, a lot of the ornate features are no longer present. All of the windows are broken and damaged, as well as the window frames. And then here's some additional photos. It appeared that the water tower was the most significant of the initial designation. And as you can see, it's in very poor condition today, as much so that you can't actually enter it. So in conclusion, the owners concur with the findings in the county staff report. We agree with the county staff's recommendation to remove the historic zoning overlay for the property. And we definitely appreciate all of your time this evening considering the application and reading through all the case material. And we'd appreciate the board's recommendation for removal of the overlay similar to county staff. And our team is available here for questions on behalf of the property owner if you guys have anything else you'd like to discuss.
Does anyone have any questions that they would like to ask for the owners and at this time? Okay. Seems as if we don't have any questions at this time. Should we open conversations up to the public?
Yeah, I think that would be a reasonable next step. I see that we have four attendees currently in the kind of viewing area. I don't know. I know that I've received materials from the two of them, but I don't know if there's an order that they would like to go in. Because I don't know how to select who would be brought in first. I believe that there is a hand raising feature in Zoom. So, if somebody would like to, oh, there we go. So, first we have joining us, Elizabeth, Fraser. Going to bring in as a panelist. So she should be appearing with us here in a moment. Elizabeth, hello. You are on and in with the Historic Review Board members and project team.
Thanks. Anthony, were you going to put up the pictures that I shared?
I would be happy to. Let me just get over to that PDF. Actually, I have it open in a tab already. And would it be suitable for me just to start with that first page of your...
There's a verbal slide before the other ones.
Oh, yes, there is. Okay, let me get that one. There we go. Okay, so I am going to share my PDF screen now.
Or not?
No, I'll get there. Don't worry. I promise.
Good job.
There we go. Okay.
The words that we see right now. Sorry, can you please move that? I was having a little feedback here. Are from the Department of Land Conservation and Development website, and they're interpreting the law governing historical landmarks. Most importantly, an owner who acquired a property after it was designated as a historic resource on the resource list does not have the right to have the designation moved under the law. Can you go to the next slide, Anthony?
Sure. Elizabeth, can I just pause for a moment on that point? Because I think it's a really important thing to have clarity on. Because I did notice that you raised that point, and I want to make sure that we're really clear. Oregon Administrative Rule 660-23-209A applies to circumstances where an owner owns the property and has purchased it and is trying to have an overlay removed that they didn't consent to because they weren't the owner at the time. What we are considering this evening is actually removal of the overlay under 660-023-209B. On the basis of findings that the property may no longer qualify on the per the standards set by the local jurisdiction. So I just want to be, I want to make sure we're very clear.
Okay,
about
I will
the
be.
OAR.
Yeah, I'll talk to the standards.
Great. Okay.
So could you bring up the pictures? So, I wanted to look at the condition of the buildings on the site. One thing I wanted to point out is that all the buildings that were mentioned in the original designation are all still on site and they're all in remarkably good condition. So we can see here at the top the picture of the house in almost the same angle. And we can see that despite the neglect and the windows that were fully broken out, apparently from the inside because they're all broken out, that the house is still straight and tall. And then when we look at it in the back, we can see that we have straight roof lines and the sharp condition that it's, you can see all the trim and it's really looks orderly. And then if we look at that last picture on that page, you can see where the deck was broken out, that you can look into side of the wall and you can see how the inside of the wall has fresh wood that's strong. And there's no evidence of rot in this house, which is why the roof is so straight and we don't have any sign of sagging like you do in some deteriorated houses. The next screen. So here we're looking at what I call the root cellar. And you can see the building looks almost identical to the inventory picture that was taken in 1990, except for we have the applicant has a whole lot of stuff sitting there. But we can see that the walls, the lower part of the wall, which is up to maybe chest height, I can't quite tell, is made out of sturdy concrete. So when we hear these things about it deteriorating, it's unreasonable. We can see that the wood is in good shape, and even this roof has got a straight line there. You don't see the sagging. And in the back, we see the good lines on the cellar. Next picture. Here we see the water tower. As was mentioned, the third floor is lost, but the first two floors are still intact and largely shingled here on the side away from the weather. And then the garage is in the final picture. They didn't put a picture in, but when I was walking down the road, I saw that, and I don't know why people say it's not there, because it's there right on Beaver Creek Road. And you can also see that the wall there is made out of sturdy concrete. So saying that it deteriorated is unreasonable. And we can see that it has a lot of historic construction techniques, like you can see the square heads on the bolts there. This is something that I was able to stand a couple feet from, so I can show you those historical details. It's a little harder to do on the house because, you know, you can't walk on someone's property. About the water tower, we have a really good example in terms of the Manson barn that was built in 1862 out at Champouy. That barn became extremely deteriorated. It also had a lot of additions added onto it. It had the roof was sagging, all the wood in the floor and supporting the structure all rotted away. But the historian recognized the importance of that building. And here you can see a picture of how they took apart what was there and started putting it back. And on the right-hand side, you can see the excellent condition it is in now when you go out to Champouy. And that came from having the vision of how important our historical buildings are. And it also reminds us how in Oregon City, the McCarver House, the developer ended up offering to restore the house to be a focal point of that development. So what we see is when the farm complex was selected, it was recognized by the Historic Review Board to be an important example of the early 20th century farm complex. And it was considered significant and rare. And it also was recognized to have few alterations. Those are all quotes from the original documents. And I have given those to you. So I'm going to move ahead through some of these points. There's a lot of nice features in them, but I know you don't want me to talk too long, so you're going to have to look in what I sent to you. So the next picture, we can go on. Those are two features I was wanting to share with you. It was questioned whether this is a landmark for the community, and so I wanted you to see these pictures. This left-hand picture, you can view Beaver Creek Road, and if you can see your image clear enough, you can see a telephone pole out there on the side of Beaver Creek Road and the wires. So what you can see from the left-hand picture viewing the road, or the right-hand picture viewing from the road towards the house, is that the house and the water tower do remain historical, something that people see as they go by, and people in the community see that all the time, which is why the hamlet of Beaver Creek at its most recent meeting voted that they wanted the historical landmark designation to remain. There was some comments that the development in this area has changed since the 30 years ago in 1990 when this was designated. And I looked carefully at the map at every property in CMAP. You can look at the dates that houses were built. And the majority of the houses were built in the 1970s. So 20 years before this designation was made, the appearance of the neighborhood was already set. There were a few that were built before the 1970s. And since this designation was made, only two more houses were built. So there is no truth that the neighborhood has changed. There's a very slight change that has occurred. I've mentioned that the hamlet wants to keep this landmark. This is a critical element in the sense of place in Beaver Creek. And then I wanted to go on to the historical significance. At the time in 1990, there was no information available on the individuals that were listed that had been associated with this house. So I went to the Clackamas County Historical Society and did research to see if there's any information about any of them. I was only able to spend one afternoon at it, but I bet we could find a little more if we had more time. In the early 1850s, this picture shows the George Marshall donation land claim. Underneath it, you can see the Garrett one. So George and Margaret Marshall gained this donation land claim in the early 1850s. And in the 1860 census, George was 30 years old, and he was a machinist, which was not a common occupation at that time. Most of the people in rural areas said that they were a farmer. And he also had a high net worth. He had $6,500, which was more than most people at that time. George Marshall was, since he was neighbors with Garrett began the local paper making. So George Marshall, he purchased Abernathy Island, which is in the middle of Willamette Falls, including the water rights. And he began, there was a paper mill established by the waterfalls there in what's now downtown Oregon City area. And so the paper mill bought the water rights that from George Marshall and the water power. And George Marshall's partnership, they wanted to open a machine shop using the water power behind the paper mill. Can you go to the next picture? And they kept half the water rights. So here's an early picture of Oregon City. So here on the right, you can see the machine shop that was started by the owner of this property, and it's right next to the Pioneer Paper Mill. This is in the mid-1800s. I'm sorry, I'm trying to go quickly through these ideas. So they managed, after the machine shop, they established the Oregon City Flouring Mill, and they converted one of the early paper plants, the first paper mill. They converted it into a flour mill in 1868 by steamboat captains Miller and Marshall. So that was another thing that Marshall was working on. By the 1876, Miller and Marshall and Company was exporting flour to England. And they had to run the mill night and day to keep up with all the demand. And they won a lot of medals for having the best pastry flour. So that's why they had international sales of their flour from our region. This information is an example of satisfying that first historical requirement. It asked to have individual, in this case, George Marshall. The property is associated with the life of an individual who made a significant contribution to the area, in this case, the Willamette Falls industrial development, and to the economy of the state and the nation. There's a few details I give you about the next owner, Daniel Williams, and about Christian Meralt, but I'm going to go on to the couple that's pictured here. Lucy, the mother, and Granville Omar Shockley, her son of 24 years of age, bought the farm in about 1910. This is a picture of Omar. His parents, Robert J. and Lucy Jane, came from Missouri. They crossed the plains in a covered wagon in 1883. They settled in the highland part of Beaver Creek in 1884, and in the census of 1910, the father was listed as a farmer. So his son and his of 24 and his wife, they bought this property. This is a picture of when he got married. That was in 1921, and he sold the farm when he married Ethel Henrici. I don't know if you noticed earlier, Henrici was mentioned. So what we see in this story, Omar's sister Nellie, she married Robert Parrish, also of Highland, and he was a farmer. So we see that the Shockleys, the Parrishes, and the Henricis, who all were connected with this property and this home, they all had roads named after them, because this was in recognition of their significance to the community. So we see that where people had thought that there weren't any important people associated with this site, it turns out that we should have had a 10 in that category, because there was a major international trade and local impacts that came out of the people associated with this property. And so in summary, in 1990, your predecessors picked the Meralt Farm Complex for good reasons. There's even more good reasons for it to be a historical landmark that have come to light. The farm was built well and has been holding up remarkably. It is a prominent landmark in our community. The hamlet of Beaver Creek wants this historical landmark to remain. The farm connects us to historical farming practices, to the community members who went before us and for whom our roads were named, and even to the events in the region, such as the early industrial growth into international trade of our local agricultural products. The simple farm style that this farm represents remains important to the people in Beaver Creek, who in this time of COVID and great change want to get back to basics. Beaver Creek loves its history and its sense of place. Please preserve our historical treasures. I think there's another couple pictures. Maybe I didn't stay fully coordinated with them. When you add 10 on this. when you add on here, you can see under 3A that the significant persons to the community, state, and country should be counted now. They weren't known at the previous time, but with some research, I was able to determine that. And then down below, I have a picture of Marshall, George Marshall, who was a steamboat captain and who, as a machinist, was able to get the industry going, the flour mill, and international trade.
Michael, I think you maybe had a question or something to add.
Not to add, but to ask Elizabeth. Well done, Elizabeth. If I understand you correctly, and that went by pretty fast for this old guy, you're saying that it was Marshall's donation land claim. Do you think Marshall built the house, or was it who do you actually think built the house?
The house was said to have been built in 1905, but the law that you are operating under talks about the people associated with the property and not just the builder. I mean, I didn't build my house. This, you know, Abraham Lincoln probably didn't build his house either, but we care about the historical homes where our important figures have lived. It gives us a sense of the different parts of their life, the hardships they went through. You know, he had to farm that property for 4 years in order to gain it and to establish his donation land claim. So
I hear you 100%. But you did name some subsequent landowners and probably have kind of a timetable.
So yes, I did.
If the house was built in 1905, can you correlate that to who might have owned it at the time?
Well, that's associated with Christian Meralt. I don't know whether he built it with his own hands or if he had the help of other people.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I was just curious who owned it at the time.
Yeah, there was actually some interesting history about him, too. I didn't know how much time I'd have to speak, so I sort of jumped through my notes. He used to have a different property in the Oregon City area, and apparently, according to a newspaper article of the time, which was before 1900, a road, I think it was Lynn Road, was built across his property, and he had a lawsuit with the county in order to get recompense for his property being divided, and the judge sent out a team to figure out what damages he'd received. And they decided he deserved $175, which obviously was worth a lot more back then. And the judge decided to send a different team out, and they decided he deserved $15. And so he had a court case against the county because of that. And the new judge decided that that previous judge was not allowed to fish around and get different estimates and needed to go with that first one. So he did help. Christian Meralt did help establish legal precedent, and possibly that settlement helped him buy this property.
I don't suppose you've had a chance to go by the county recorder's office and look up the deed?
This is a large task to investigate each one of these things. But
it is.
But even just with that one afternoon working on it, I realized that one of the most significant citizens in the area actually was connected to this property. And then, you know, Henrici Road is a major road in Beaver Creek. And so Granville Omar Shockley's wife was out of the Henrici family. And his sister married into the Parrish family, which is another important road in Oregon City. And then the Shockley Road is a more minor road in the area. So we can see that these different family members that were connected with this property, that they all were recognized as significant by the community.
Megan, I see that you put your hand up.
Sure, thank you. I actually, it's just a comment, not a question. I appreciate the value that you are bringing to the people who made this property story. I know that we have our scoring system, and I guess that we have to apply value to certain people, and I just get very uncomfortable with that because as a commoner myself, I feel like we're all busy living our personal stories and they're all contributing in some way. And I appreciate that you dug into this to be able to tell us the story of these people. It really brought a lot of meaning to me. So thank you for that effort you made.
Thank you. Actually, I can't help but say, but when I started this, I didn't know all these things, and it is really meaningful to find them out. And as I look at the pictures of the house, I mean, I actually start to love it in a way that I never did before. When I used to drive by, I'd always turn and look at it and wish that my kids could farm that property. But then as I look at it, now I start seeing all these details and I'm really interested in it. My husband, he got a book about root cellars many years ago because he wanted to see how we could put up our potatoes and our different vegetables and how to do it right. And then I see, oh, these people lived before refrigeration. They had to know how to handle their different foods. I don't know.
Unless there are other members of the historic review board that have, I'm sorry, Elizabeth, don't let me cut you off. If you have more to share, please do. But I do want to make sure we have time for the other attendees to participate as well.
Did Amanda have her hand up? I couldn't quite tell what came of that.
Yeah, I was just going to thank you for your time investigating into the history of the site as well. And the one point I do want to keep in mind with this particular site is that essentially any property in the area, you know, was part of a larger, extent at some point. And I kind of just want to make sure that we focus on the structures themselves, and who was in those structures, just as kind of like a point to keep in mind. I think it's fascinating to hear the story of kind of why they ended up becoming part of the community. But at the end of the day,
the Shockleys did live in the house, and they were connected with the parish, Shockley and Henry C. Rhodes. But if you read, in your, code that you're carrying out, number 2, environmental significance, A, I'm reading the wrong one. I need to go to 3A, which is the, historical one. Hang on, let me find it real fast. Maybe you can find it faster than me. Under 3A, it says it is associated with the life or activities of a person, group, organization, or institution that has made a significant contribution. So it does apply. It doesn't mention just certain buildings. It says that it's associated with the life of the people. So, you know, when we have Abraham Lincoln, people are interested in all the stages of his life.
Anything else from the Historic Review Board members for Elizabeth? No? Okay. Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much. I appreciate you being here. I'm going to let's see. Let me put in the area. Looks like we have Diane Maxson, who I am going to bring up to be a panelist. Diane, you're on with the Historic Review Board members and the project team.
And,
oh, sorry, Amanda. You have
some- I was going to say, what was the weight of that point, the 3A?
3A is up to 10 points.
That one was 10 points. And then it was 3B.
3B was also up to 10 points. So 3A, B, C, and D are all up to 10 points.
Oh, threes. Okay. Not two. Okay.
Diane, you are on with the review board members. I saw that you had your hand raised. Maybe did you mean to, do you want to offer comment? You're muted currently. Let's see if I can.
Okay.
There you are. We have you now.
Here I am. I keep hearing how dilapidated this property is, and I'm wondering if maybe that is the responsibility of the current owner who has let it become dilapidated, which is then decreasing its historical value. Possibly if the current owners had the same reverence or respect for the property that previous owners had that got it designated as a historical site, that it would be in a lot better shape. Maybe they even knocked out the windows. I have no idea what happened, but it didn't have to be quite as dilapidated as it currently is. That's neglect.
But, you know, I think you raise a really good point about the property and the very real world limitations of our land use regulations as they exist in Clackamas County. There is not an affirmative requirement for a property owner to maintain a property. And so, though I agree, perhaps that the property has been allowed to fall into disrepair. We don't have an avenue by which to enforce affirmative maintenance standards. And so we have to unfortunately evaluate the property based on what is today. Understanding, of course, that the way our code is written may incentivize, in some cases, neglect. It's certainly... not ideal, and it is the very point that you're making is something that both myself as a county staff member and I think members of this board have grappled with and expressed frustration with in the past.
Well, we live, and the property is right over there, so okay. We see what is going on there and what the proposals in the future might be, and it really has been neglected all along.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Thank you for being here and for sharing that perspective. We appreciate it.
And Michael, it looks like you have a question.
I just want to say to Diane, we hear you. Mm-hmm. All of us on the Historic Review Board have issues with the way the Historic Landmark Preservation Ordinance is worded. There are, and Anthony is 100% correct. We're bound by the ordinance, and there's nothing in the ordinance that provides one incentives for property owners to maintain their property in good condition, and two offers zero financial support in any way, shape, or form for homeowners to maintain their historic landmark. So the nuts and the bolts of it are if the property changes hands and the next property owner has no interest in preservation and stewardship, and decides to let it deteriorate, it deteriorates.
And if I can just, Megan, I see that you have your hand up. I also just want to chime in and say that it has certainly also been the case that, and I've spoken with a number of property owners in the county who unfortunately, for whatever, however it happened, purchased a property and it didn't come to light. They may have been unaware, in fact, they were purchasing a historic landmark property. Now, of course, that doesn't change the fact that it's fallen into disrepair or whatever, but I can imagine a scenario wherein somebody might purchase a piece of land with the intention of, frankly, the intention of developing it, and knowing that that was their intention, not even thought to look to see if it was a historic landmark. And that's a struggle which is ongoing. We would love to have some more educational resources to send out flyers and such to the folks in the county, and that's something I'm working with our the leadership of our planning program to see if we can get looped in to a future budget cycle. So fingers crossed on that. Megan.
Well, I don't think I'm saying anything new except that as a homeowner of a historic home, my perspective is it feels like these expectations are placed upon us, and usually the expectations require more money because the whatever changes you want to make have to be historically accurate, which I 1,000% endorse, which is why we bought our house. But if there are no financial incentives, you just bring up a great point, Ms. Maxton. I feel like it's really frustrating as a homeowner to have an overseen organization telling you, yes, this is what you should do, but we're not going to offer you any financial incentive to do the right thing. And we're going to tell you that what you want to do isn't going to work because it actually will cost you more money to do what we're suggesting you do. And it feels like a really kind of unfair system. And then I look at the property we're discussing tonight, and I think that asking the owners of that property, I don't know when they became the owners, but those buildings have been in disrepair for, it appears to me, quite a while. And the cost of bringing them back to useful is so incredibly extensive. How can we ask a property owner to do that when we don't have any financial incentive to help them out?
Yeah, it's a really sticky wicket, as they might say. Anyways, Ms. Maxson, thank you so much. Is there anything else you had for us? I don't want to cut you short. So, good. Okay, thank you so much for your time tonight. I appreciate it. Attendees. Let me bring, looks like Barry is his hand raised, so let me bring him in to the panelists. So Barry is going to be joining us here in a moment. I see it's moved over. Hopefully. Barry, are you there? I think you might be on mute. It looks like you're off mute, but we can't hear you.
I think it might be the that sound thing that happens every so often where you have to
switch your headphones or
I'm trying to remember what that process is. I think you have to go to, so Barry, are you, well, I can't, let's see, can we type to him?
yes.
Barry, if you're on your computer, Barry is at.
Okay, got it. Barry is at, one moment, we will get this working here. There we go, okay. And
let's see if this will help.
There, okay, Barry at Elizabeth's computer, you are in,
Yes, can you hear me now?
We can. I'm so glad.
Oh, great. Good. Thank you. Nice to meet you, all you folks.
Hello. Can you bring his pictures up?
I can. Give me just one moment.
You can set them here if that helps you.
Barry, did you want me to start with the with your narrative or just right on the photographs?
Yeah, just at the top photograph would be fine.
Okay. Let me go ahead and get the screen shared. Okay, here we are.
Okay, so I guess what this picture is kind of showing out, you know, like everybody's saying that it's in bad condition and everything, and it's deteriorating and stuff, but really the house is in a lot better shape than you realize, at least as far as I think. I've been a carpenter my whole life. I've worked on many old buildings and houses and straightened them up and all this stuff. But, you know, the foundation isn't sagging anywhere. For a post and beam house, the foundation must be great. You know, I mean, somebody ought to look at that and see what's making the thing hold up so well, for one. And, you know, and I guess you can move to the next slide. Now, showing this where the porch has fallen off here, it has opened up the framing details on this. And it looks to me like this is what they call a balloon framed house instead of the modern style platform framing, where the wall studs go from the first floor, you know, foundation all the way up to the roof line, you know, where the rafters sit on the wall. And then your second floor joists are just nailed to the sides of your wall studs. And, you know, I've seen that before in houses and everything, but the real unique thing about this is that when you look at the siding, there's no sheathing underneath the siding. The siding's just put directly on the studs. And it appears to be that there's an interior sheathing, which is, you know, holding the house up square and everything, which is a very unique kind of situation. And also the second floor joists, a lot of times they'll let in what they call a ledger for the joist to sit on when they do a balloon frame. And I think your interior sheathing there is acting as a ledger to hold that up. And I think that's very unique as well. Let's see. And then you kind of go to, you know, the front porch. Yeah, see, that's the exploded view where you can see inside there. And like Elizabeth was saying, there is no rot or anything there, really. I mean, all this lumber looks in fairly decent shape. Sure, you're going to have to scrape paint and fix it and all, but it just seems like, I don't know. It just seems like it's a very doable thing especially for a construction, you know, a developer to come in and fix something up. See, moving down to here you can see again how straight the house is. It's plumb. All the roof lines are just, I mean, everything's great on it, really. That house, I bet, is pretty solid. Yeah, without some kind of inspection and actually going around with an ice pick or something looking around, you know, you don't know really what to say. But other than I can see that it still stands straight and true. If you go to the next one. I guess I've been looking a lot at the windows too. Now, how do we know that these windows have been replaced? Because I think it was pretty much a style back then to where they had tall, slim windows instead of, you know, big picture window kind of things back in the 1900s. Now, a little bit later on, they started doing the big picture windows. But I would think that those are double hung windows of the of what was originally there. And you can tell there's a little bit different kind of trim was done a little differently, which is pretty unique, because the way the head trim over the windows was, it's a little bit wider than the side casing on the windows and things, and it looks like there was a lintel above there as well, over top of the window, and of course then they had an apron under the sills. Some of them have that on there and some aren't, which, you know, which be easy to match, you know, with, you got an example of what was there. And then I guess if you go around to the porch a little bit, the front porch, that's the back.
It must be at the top. That's not the picture.
Yeah, okay. See, if you look, this picture I think is probably sometime before these other pictures, because the porch roof looks not deteriorated at all. It was kind of fell down or came down, however it came down, and still in good shape. The other picture seems like it's been sitting there weathered for a while, and you can tell that the beams, the porch beams themselves, are what they call box beams, you know, where they didn't use just solid lumber for beams. They created a box to put the to set on top of the post. And even the post could have been a box post, you know, instead of a solid lumber post. I mean, you can't tell from anything here because it's, you know, it's covered up, I guess, if it's still there. And then the bay window, too, you know, is done in a very old, stylish way. I think that there is a lot of craftsman trim details on this house. I mean, even the corner boards look like they go over top of the siding instead of butting the siding into the corner boards. Being that the siding is directly on the studs, you know, they have to cover up that joint somehow, so they just use the corner board itself. And then up there, the gable, you know, soffit rake, or rake soffit trim, whatever you want to call it like that, that's got, you know, bed molding and everything up around there, it seems to be the same over the bay window too. I mean, it's pretty hard to see just from pictures. And I guess the siding, I think we used to call it old German style siding, but it's like a shiplap that has a coved out on the top that goes up underneath the board above it, you know, and you really don't see that anymore. I don't know if there was some kind of a water table that went around the bottom edge under the siding above the skirt that's around the crawl space. Yeah, that's a real old feature. What else is there? The windows, I guess we've already talked about as far as this side. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. One other idea about these smaller, shorter windows up there in the attic. Can you scroll up a little bit? Yeah, there you go. These windows, normally when, you know, they put these little windows in because, of course, they hit the eave there, and there's probably a slope ceiling inside there, which there's, no headroom at all. So they had to put these short windows in, but that's a very early feature or in design, where normally they would put a dormer in there. So you can put a regular sized window in there, but in this case, they don't do that, you know? So I don't know. I think there's quite a bit of uniqueness about this house that really should be preserved. It just seems like it's still a good house. And I don't know if people are going to develop this place. Seems like they can afford to restore this one house to keep it as a landmark for, you know, the residents who live out here. I mean.
It looks like Amanda has her hand up.
Yeah. So the, you know, kind of coming back to what we're able to make decisions upon. So looking at the ratings from the architectural features and that sort of thing, can you the comment that there's kind of inconsistencies in details between windows, it sounds like there are the particular detail that catches my eye is the detail at the trim head, ahead of the window, the trim up at the top there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that detail is intriguing to me, but it sounds like it doesn't occur everywhere, which I would interpret that then, if that detail isn't occurring elsewhere, that potentially is an addition or remodel that had occurred at some point in time. And of course, you know, it's hard to say when that exactly occurred. But that goes back to some of the comments that came up about additions and remodels that occurred over time. And that's kind of a little bit of a question from my side, just like trying to determine the quality of craftsmanship and what's remaining. So is that detail, is that consistent on majority of windows, or is it really only these couple that we see here?
Okay. Can you still hear me?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes. Well, the bay window looks like it has, and the windows above that, you can see where there was something up there that was taken off. And even the windows on this south side here, whether that was just taking off for whatever reason, I don't know. I don't necessarily mean that the windows were replaced. They still look like double hung windows. And if there were wooden windows, you know, I mean, if you're maintaining a historic place, you'd still put wooden windows in there that look like just like the old ones. I mean, isn't that, I mean, wouldn't that be called maintenance?
I'm more stating alterations that occurred prior to the historical registry. So we're discussing like what is original versus what has occurred and when that modification may have occurred. So that's kind of, you know, some of the questions in my mind. Because that goes into the thought process and conversation on, is this building really a reflection of that historical character of that time period, or if it really is just been modified to the point where, it's not as authentic as it once was. And so that's where some of those details kind of start to play into those conversations. Just to kind of give some background of like kind of what I'm thinking right now. And
yeah, well, it definitely looks like somebody had taken off what originally was there, as far as the lintel over top of the window over the head trim. If you look on the back as well, I think you see more head trim up there too. You might be able to zoom in on that one. You can definitely the bottom window there. You can tell there was a piece there. Mm-hmm. Or maybe there's from a different angle from the other side, from the north, looking at the back of the house. What's that one? It's pretty hard to make out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So just kind of a couple thoughts. And then the octagon bay, or kind of the bay window and the porch, even maybe.
The front porch?
Yeah.
Well, the back porch is definitely an addition.
Yeah.
If you want to call it a porch.
Yeah, definitely. And that the we'll call it the lean-to, that's the back cellar? Porch. Yeah, is that
the cellar?
Not the independent structure, the structure that's attached to the home. That's the lean-to. That's a lean-to cellar at that point.
Oh, I see.
Confirm. Yeah, because so the independent structure, the smaller structure, the cellar, that's actually that. But then the we'll say the attachment. So is that acting more as a rear porch, or is that a lean-to for cellar purposes?
I would think it's probably tools and cellar, you know, that kind of thing. It's the independent building that's the original, the independent cellar.
Mm-hmm.
Or
and
yeah, the back part, the attachment is not original. I would not guess.
So
no, she wanted me to talk about this.
Okay. Yeah, and that I can tell has had some modifications to it based upon how that red siding is most definitely in addition to the structure at some point.
Well, they did some repair, it looks like to me. Somebody did.
They just sided over the wood siding most likely. Because if you look at the imagery, you can see the siding steps out in this case, and in the other image it sets in. So it would have stacked on the concrete most likely.
Okay.
Yeah. And this image, the siding projects out past the concrete wall. So okay. to me, that's most likely they're just covering, I mean, the previous, structures or envelope or.
Are still there underneath.
Yeah. It's probably under there still, but,
well,
the quality is definitely, you know, probably questionable.
Okay. You look at that on the lean-to part too. It wasn't built to the standard that the house was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the house itself is definitely worth not tearing down and preserving it as a site, in my mind.
And so there's kind of a few points of balance between what we're looking at and essentially what we're tasked to do here. So the task at hand is whether this home qualifies for the or meets the requirements of the total points to maintain the overlay. If we don't meet those points, and the points aren't just based upon the structure itself, it's based upon the historical integrity, in which Elizabeth definitely did a wonderful job kind of providing some insights that we probably weren't aware of. So I think, you know, it was helpful to hear those things. I think, you know, there's points made about, you know, maybe there's still some structural integrity to this home. But then it comes back down to what's the historical significance of it, because it can still be a really, you know, solid 1905 home. But it's just a matter of how historical it is, right?
Well, all I know is that there's fewer and fewer of them around. So in my mind, it's becoming more rare the longer it sits there. you know?
And there's validity to that for sure.
Can I comment on what you're saying on your criteria 1B and 1D? They're about high quality execution. 1A is about the exceptionalness. 1D is about original type, and then E is about rare building type, style, and construction. And Barry gave a whole series of descriptions of the house that were describing how it was a historical type that's not common. Like when he said the balloon type of, I mean, I can't say the words he says, but that whole list of things he said were all historical elements of the building that aren't common.
So they are for that era. They are like balloon framing was common.
Is the point. This is representative of that era.
Yes, but it doesn't make it a unique historical significant structure in that regard. It's vernacular.
In Beaver Creek, we don't have any other of these.
Well, one thing about the balloon framing is the way that they use the interior sheathing, which is, you know, I don't think I may have seen one other house over all my years of having interior sheathing like that.
So I'm not going to argue against that specific construction detail. But because from our perspectives, we're really just about the exterior. So I know I hear you that might be a special detail that was for this, you know, maybe not as typical for this house. But at the end of the day, we have to pretend that there's siding on the building and we can't see inside because we don't get that allowance for most of our reviews. So we kind of have to look at it from that perspective. So I don't want to disregard what you're saying, but at the end of the day, we have to look at it from the outside only.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of details inside that would be very historical and unique as well. I mean, such items like, I think, I know somebody who, I guess they helped do a film with the college or something, and they were in that house doing a film, and they had commented that it had beaverboard all throughout it, and beaverboard was started in New York back in early 1901 or so, right around there, mm-hmm. and they would use that instead of like lath and plaster. You know, they plaster over the beaverboard.
So that's special, but we can't, that's not under our jurisdiction. So I just would like to remove any interior conversation just for the sake that this meeting's going to kind of go a little longer. So we just want to be respectful of everyone's time that, we really just can't get into those specific things because it can't, it's not part of our,
Okay. Well, I'm really done.
Okay. I'm done. Sorry. and to that point, Anthony, do we have any other, people who would like to speak just so that we're kind of
Great question. The three, folks who are in the attendee area, have all spoken.
Okay. Okay. Excellent. And thank you so much for, providing your insights too, because that is really helpful. So, does anyone have any questions? And it looks like Michael does. Go for it, Michael.
I've been recognized. Whoa. Well, I have two questions. One for Elizabeth and, the Lindsays anyway, and one for Anthony. So Elizabeth, has anyone in the community approach the property owner about A, asking if they plan on restoring the home, and or B, requesting that it be moved to another location.
Do you hear us right now?
Yeah.
The owners don't live in the community. So like when we had the Hamlet of Beaver Creek meeting, they didn't actually come into attendance. So it's difficult to have a conversation. But when I read the example in Oregon City, there was a lot of roundabout. The Historical Review Board appreciated the home, and they're trying to get all the different angles to come together. And they actually finally did find a way that everyone could work together and, you know, preserve the home, develop the site. And so they did, it didn't have to be an either or thing. The plan that the developer showed for the 28 homes for this property, I'm not looking at it right this second, but this, historical complex is on the very edge of the property. So, it does not necessarily interfere with most of that development plan, or maybe the whole thing, I can't say. It's off to the side, so it's not like right in the middle of where they would want to do the rest of what they're doing. So, in some cases, it's found that you could just, instead of it being the whole 60 acres, it could be 5 acres that currently has 5 acre zoning in this zoning. So there's sometimes ways to work with things to make a solution that is where you don't have to just go to one extreme or to another extreme.
Well, I have a response to that before I ask Anthony his my question for him. But in your response, you quoted with regard to the Oregon City property that you speak of, you quote the applicant as having pledged basically to restore that building. I've not seen any such pledge in this application for this property.
We know that.
So
well,
perception is that in the Oregon City case, which, by the way, has their own preservation ordinance separate from ours. In that instance, it sounds to me like the owner was somewhat willing to work with folks to preserve it in some way, whereas in this case, I've not seen any indication of that. My other question is for Anthony. Anthony, the historic overlay, as I understand it, applies to the entire property. Is that correct?
It does. So currently the historic preservation overlay is applied to the entire property.
So my question for you, Anthony, is there a system in place for reducing that overlay to a smaller piece?
It's a really good question. So you may remember previous overlay removal that was before the board. Mike, I don't remember if you were on the board at the time or not. It was the Kirchham Farm. Mm-hmm. And on that property, it was a larger kind of multi-10, I forget how many acres, but a larger farm set. And in that case, the overlay was actually only on a smaller portion of the site where the structures of the historic farmstead actually sat. And the owners at the time were proposing to remove it from that more limited. So there is a framework by which one could request reducing the overlay to something less than the entire property. My belief is that that would have to be initiated and motivated by the property owners or decided by the Board of County Commissioners at their reconnaissance. In terms of what we have to kind of evaluate today is a recommendation on the proposal as it is before us.
Okay. Well, the structures have the potential, and I use that word carefully, they have the potential of being restored. But as Amanda points out, the cost of that restoration could be quite significant. To our knowledge, the homeowner has not indicated any willingness whatsoever to go that route and attempt to restore it. And the community, to our knowledge, has not approached the property owner about either purchasing the structures or asking if they could move them themselves. So we're kind of stuck in a way.
And to bounce off that, if I can, Michael, to that point, I do recall we have in the past provided recommendations, maybe the right term, for or suggestions, because we can't require anything specifically other than a yes or no. But we can recommend that they reach out to, are they required to post? Oh, no, they aren't required to post to see if anyone would take structures, correct? So we could recommend that they do.
Yeah, this is a little bit distinct from our demolition and relocation process.
Right.
Which requires a preservation plan to be put in place ahead of time and then posting the property for a certain amount of time before coming to the historic review board and proposing either demolition or removal. This is a type 3 application, it's actually going. Well, what we are tasked with this evening is coming up not with a recommendation to staff to issue a land use decision, mm-hmm. but a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners to take or not take action on the removal of the overlay. So there's not necessarily, unfortunately, a framework within making a recommendation to the board to, I mean, provisionally say, wouldn't it be nice if, but I don't know if there's a framework in terms of what we can send to the Board of County Commissioners with a recommendation to someone outside of that body.
Yeah, gotcha. Michael, did you have any other questions? Because I have.
Well, they're going around in my head right now, you know. I know with the demolition, the last one we did down on Highway 212, 224, that was a demolition request. And because the ordinance had a clause in it to allow a delay, in that one, we wanted to allow a delay so that any conceivable party that wanted to step in and move it could do so, had some time to do that. Anthony, in this case, is there any potential for recommending a delay?
Unfortunately, there's not. Unfortunately, it is quite constrained looking at the site, assessing it relative to the 106-point scale, and where you all as a body believe it would fall within that framework, and then based on that assessment, making a recommendation to the Board of County Commissioners. So that's kind of where we are. I do see that the folks over at AKS have a hand up, and I think it's been up for a little while, so it sounds like they might want to chime in. So, where are you at? You're on mute.
There we go.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
I heard you guys sort of moving towards a recommendation, so I just wasn't sure if the applicant was going to have a chance and if that was now to kind of speak to these public comments. Is that good? Okay, sweet. Please. Yeah, so I just wanted to start out by saying thank you so much to all the public comments and people coming out to join the conversation tonight. As a land use planner, it's super important and integral to the process to hear from everybody, and we've heard some really interesting facts tonight about this site. I just wanted to kind of back up a little bit. So the owner did purchase the property just a number of years ago. So as you saw in my presentation and the listings previously, a lot of those structures were already rated poor in condition and listed as extremely dilapidated in the summary itself. Although the house was, you know, listed with some detailed ornamental features and whatnot, I think that the site itself in 1990 was actually designated due to the presence of the water tower. If you read through the summaries and a lot of the information, I think that that was really the main presence that was important to the board at that time. And as you can see through all those pictures, the water tower is actually in severe hazardous condition. You can't walk inside of it. As you can see, the third tower is off of it. You know, we've looked at all these pictures and whatnot, and I think Amanda really hit on a good point there, that the burden of the cost of, you know, bringing those structures back up for somebody who recently brought the property is pretty significant. And going back to that whole historical conversation as well, you know, the board originally voted that this property was 41 out of 106 points. So with that being said, a lot of those elements that we're talking about tonight weren't found to be true at the time of the designation, including a lot of the historical craftsmanship of the home itself. I think that it was really based on the water tower and kind of the farm complex as it is. So I just wanted to point that out. And I think that because the criteria itself is pretty subjective in nature, and that the historical case file that you had before you in the application, it really doesn't go into detail and describe how each of the three sections and subsections were really rated and for what detailed elements. It's kind of hard to go back and score them now and see why that was so important to the board then. But I just wanted to thank you all for your time again. We've been at it for a little bit now, so I really appreciate it. And if you have any more questions about the site itself, we're happy to answer them for you. I'm not sure if we're going to keep going through with public comments and further testimony.
Yeah, and, you know, I kind of, the thing I wanted to do was circle back as to why was the entire property placed under overlay and not just the structures or the water tower or that entirety. And so I think that, and your comments definitely brought up some kind of questions. And so really at the end of the day, we only have the previous report to kind of use as our guide for that. And so, you know, if we look at what they rated as kind of the highest point, it really, I mean, even just looking at the numbers, and it comes down to 2C and 2D are higher numbers. Rare building type and style also being another one. And in my mind, from my perspective, and, you know, this is me, you know, projecting my thoughts, but it really comes down to the water tower as well being that primary important structure. Thank you. Look at this here. So historic structures with environmental significance 2C, and then the community character, you know, maybe that does go back to the farmstead aspect of it. But yeah, it just keeps on the rear building, the historic structure. So, I guess I'll put my stance that I do think that the primary rationale behind it was the water tower. I do agree that it's in extreme disrepair out of any of the structures there. I think it's the most intriguing, and I'm sad to see it in the shape that it's in. I also think that it's probably a little too far along to be true to the historical nature that was there. So I do question whether we have, you know, whether it's a reasonable request, or, you know, if it's reasonable to maintain that overlay strictly because or for that water tower at this point. That's kind of where I'm at. And I just, I don't agree that it's in good enough shape to maintain that overlay at this point, from my opinion. And I'm sad to say that, because it is four, three structures left. So it's sad to say. Does anyone else, I guess, do we want to, do we have any additional feedback or comments that we want from public or anyone else, or should we kind of dive into where we're all landing at this point?
I will leave that. I don't see any additional hands raised in the attendee area. I think that everybody who's with us from the public has had an opportunity to speak to the site and their thoughts on it. So,
yeah. Okay. So then my one other, like, maybe the house isn't like dilapidated. Like, you know, maybe it could be, renovated, but it would be a substantial, burden cost, to do so. And then, I also question whether it's historic overlay worthy in the long run. So that's my other kind of big question to all of us.
I will just note that, since I mentioned that, Ms. Maxson did raise her hand again. So, we've done public comments and had that portion, but I will leave it to the board's discretion, if we want to reopen comment.
Is everyone okay if we we absolutely would love to hear.
Great.
Yeah.
I will. All right, Diane, you're on with the committee.
Yes, one quick comment. The buildings may be in disrepair and you might not think that deserved the historical overlay, but Elizabeth brought up many points about the history and the people, and that then, to me, changes it, because that then would increase the point value if you're going to look at the whole thing rather than just this one structure of a water tower that someone has let go to pot. And that's all I wanted to say.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. So I'll throw in my two cents. So I think that there's there's some intriguing names to it, but at the end of the day, I don't think there's a lot of precedence within our county of maintaining a overlay strictly for somebody owning property. Is that, Anthony, is there any, what's the kind of?
There's not. When we see properties as having the association of a property as it's spoken to in both in our preservation ordinance and in preservation ordinances kind of broadly, it would be unusual for the simple basis of previous ownership by a notable party to be the historic basis for kind of protection of a farmstead and of structures that weren't themselves associated with that notable party.
Yeah.
You know, an imperfect analogy, and so forgive me. But a beautiful, ornate, 1930s craftsman bungalow that's a really nice expression of that type, that happens to be built on land that was owned by John McLaughlin previously, is not notable because it's on land that was owned by John McLaughlin. That association is too tenuous to qualify as a, typically considered too tenuous to qualify as an association with that notable historic figure, unless he himself or perhaps his immediate descendants were the builders of the house or inhabited the structures that are being protected. And so that's generally the kind of philosophic trappings, I guess I would say, of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. So does anyone else have additional kind of comment? Oh, yeah.
I would note that Elizabeth has raised her hand. So shall we bring her back in?
Yeah, great. Absolutely.
Wonderful.
Keep it open-ended.
Yeah. Elizabeth, you're on with the board.
Hello, this is Barry.
Instead. Oh, Barry, hello.
She might have a little comment, too. Now, as far as, not trying to beat this thing too much, but the location of this also, I think, is very underrated the way it is rated there. I think it is a very good location because it's the entrance of Beaver Creek, and seems like it was noted that it had a good location when it was first appointed as a historic place. So I just think that also has a lot to weigh on it. And I guess that's it.
And my addition was that it seems as if the Marshall tie-in is being diminished. I don't know that that's true. We spent a lot of time at this location, but it shouldn't be forgotten that the Shockleys, they had three streets named after their family, and it shows that they were well recognized in their community. You don't name a street after someone you don't care about. So that indicates that those three families were well respected, and two members of them were there, and his sister was another one of them. So you can see that these people were the main pillars of the community, and they lived in this house. They lived in this house and they farmed this farm. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what 2A, what 3A is about, is a specific person contributed to their community. That's the only meaning of it. And we see that by them naming the streets after this family that lived there, that is recognized by the community. And in terms of the sense of place, the community of Beaver Creek sees 2D, that's the community character, and some of the other ones under environmental as being very important. People in Beaver Creek wouldn't vote for this to remain on if we didn't think that this landmark status and well-located and community character weren't real important to us.
Thank you. So that's one thing that I do want to be sensitive to, because, of course, community, how the community sees a site is extremely valuable. So when I provide counter points, know that I want to be really sensitive and respectful of that. the things, so the Beaver Creek as it is today, it's recognized as valuable too. Beaver Creek boundaries weren't designated because of this property. So if they were designated because of this property, I think that might change my perspective a little bit. But the significance of the property itself being at the beginning of Beaver Creek, I understand from a geographical sense now that that matters, but it doesn't.
Amanda, I don't think you know what Beaver Creek is. The county established community planning organizations, and they're not the rural center. They're the whole area around the rural center. So the community of Beaver Creek goes out a considerable distance from the rural center, and this property is actually quite close to the rural center.
So what I'm referring to is how everyone else has been referencing this, that this is the
entrance to Beaver Creek?
Yes.
That's because the urban growth boundary is a little bit north of Henrici Road. And so there's a sense of Beaver Creek. There's actually a sign north of there that says you're entering Beaver Creek. But when you get to Henrici Road, that's when the real feeling of Beaver Creek comes on. So this is the first barn that you see as you're coming into Beaver Creek. And then you go a little bit further, I don't know, maybe a half mile, and then you're at the rural center.
I'm just painting the picture that it doesn't align with how I perceive this being significant from a geographical location standpoint. Okay. So I'm just trying to paint that historical significance, that historical overlay wasn't set because of its location. Okay.
If I might just chime in briefly on the subject of it being a significant or known visual landmark in the community. In the ratings that I proffered and shared, when I was evaluating it on the point of being a conspicuous visual landmark in a community or neighborhood, there is a document that we use that kind of gives like a brief few sentence description, through word description of each of different point levels, with 10 being a symbol for the community. And I want to really emphasize here that when this uses the word community, it means the Clackamas County community as a county. So symbol for the community, 10 points. Conspicuous, well-known in the community, 7 points. Conspicuous, well-known in the neighborhood. And I would associate the area of the county, the Beaver Creek Hamlet and associated rural area, most closely with conspicuous and well-known in the neighborhood, 5 points. In my rating, I gave it 3 points under that criteria. That was in part because I don't know, I think it is known, but I don't know that if I were to go to a random person in Beaver Creek and say, hey, tell me where the water tower is, they would know exactly. I could be mistaken. I would be open to being wrong on that, but let's say that it is in fact conspicuous and well known in the neighborhood or that region of the county. I would be open to, changing my rating to 5 points for that criteria. That still would not change the fact that the site as a whole does not reach, to my mind, the 40-point threshold. So I just wanted to, there's been a little bit of back and forth about whether it's conspicuous and its prominence in the community, and I think it is certainly known among community members. But when we look at the way that we assess and the language used to assess the different point values for the significance of it as a landmark, I really am most comfortable thinking of it as the neighborhood being the Beaver Creek area. And then I'm open to discussion of literally about the whole thing, if you're wrong with the whole thing. But in my mind, it then falls within the degree to which it is conspicuous or well-known among that community. Because I know that if I walked up to somebody in Molino or government camp and said, hey, where's the water tower? They wouldn't know what I was talking about.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
I was wondering if there would be merit to looking at, you're kind of already speaking to it, Anthony, looking at the scores that are in place and if there's anything that needs to be adjusted based on the information that was brought tonight, or if everyone's just comfortable with the scores that are there. It's not an area that I'm very familiar with, so I guess I'm looking to people who have more expertise on this than me, but I feel like as a board, we're tied to, okay, what's the score? If it doesn't meet the 40 points, then there's really not much that can be done. Are there any scores you want to revisit?
I'm open to that conversation for sure as staff. Ultimately, the recommendation has to come from the board members. And so, to the extent that, specific, when it goes before the board, when it goes to the Board of County Commissioners, it will go, however it goes to them, however the recommendation goes, it will need to be sent with, findings and findings based on scores. So to the extent that information that's come to light today or this evening, or over the course of this discussion, might change the way that those scores are assessed. My role as staff is to take the recommendation of the board members and present it to the Board of County Commissioners. And then prior to that, to present a kind of non-interested party's impartial, I guess, assessment as a starting place for that discussion. So, I guess that was a lot of words, but an awful lot of words to get to the idea that to the extent that members of the board think it prudent to do so, by all means, that is possible.
Right.
And I'm happy to bring up any of the documents or rundowns of scores. I see Mike as an, I'm sorry, Maria, is your hand up as well? I just looked at the screen and noticed that we have two folks with hands up.
Oh, yeah.
I think that, I guess one, I'm not sure how you guys are facilitating your meeting, but I think that once all of the public comments are over and you guys kind of close that portion of the hearing, we would like to have a chance to kind of have our last say, and then I think usually then you guys would go into deliberation, but I'm just not sure how it's working out.
Yeah, we kind of
step on anyone's toes.
Oh no, we Curtis, or we're trying to be courteous of everyone's opinion. So we did open it back up. So we kind of closed the door, but opened it back up so we can casually close the door if there's any other comments. And did you guys want to provide some additional feedback or commentary as well?
Yeah, so I guess just kind of bringing it back to the scoring designations and kind of the conversation we were all having earlier in regards to that, you know, every property has a larger story as a whole, and you know, some different references of names were brought up earlier that weren't necessarily described in any of the historical listings. They're not listed on the SHPO website. They're not, not that that isn't significant, but I think it goes back to, Amanda, what you said earlier about who actually lived in the home, who built the home, what significance does it have to the site itself. And I still personally think that it really is because of its farm complex in nature and, you know, the uniqueness of that water tower that's actually just very hazardous in its current state. And going back to the scoring designations, I think that, you know, the score in 1990 kind of presents itself and kind of reflects staff score in the historical significance category that, you know, a lot of those scores really did place as zeros. And I think that it kind of just brings to light that I think that the original designation was truly based on the farm complex and water tower nature of the site. And I think we've kind of said everything that could be said in this kind of roundabout conversation that, you know, these historical properties, they're important. And, you know, it brings up a lot of public comments from people, and those are really appreciated. And if you have any more questions, we're happy to answer them as well.
Okay.
I guess I might just add, I think, without getting, I think that we have had some really interesting discussion about associations of various proximity to people who had a significant role in the county. I think to the extent that, so for instance, it's the property's association with Lucy and Omar Shockley, for instance, was a known quantity at the time it was nominated. And we know it was a known quantity at the time it was nominated because it's shown and listed in the subject property description. The previous property, the owners prior to Christian Mural were also known at the time to the folks who were doing the historic research and the putting the nominations together. I think that some of the second and third order connections may not necessarily be all the way fully reflected in that, but I don't, much of what has been discussed was known information at the time and was not thought at the time to warrant a connection and a rating in terms of association with a significant person in this county. That's not taking anything away from the great information, and the really kind of thorough and impressive work, that some of the members of our public did, in sharing information about the property. But, anyways, I'll leave it at that.
No, I think that's a really good point, actually, that, you know, if they had known about it at that point as well, that and that didn't impact their points back then, you know, in my perspective then, really what it comes down to is the buildings, right? And the care, like the integrity of what's left of the buildings. And so, and in coming back to the water tower, and the water tower being the, no doubt, the most important architectural feature on that site. Like, there's just no question about that. And it is in disrepair. So then that quality does reduce its points. And if it was at 41 beforehand, then, you know, it's already getting knocked down quite a bit for that. So does everyone feel like does anyone have any other comments first before I suggest any direction?
I would just note that Elizabeth has raised her hand.
Okay.
So I'm gonna, if it's all right, I don't know. I'll leave it to y'all. But
how about as a board, are we closed or open at this point? I want to be respectful of everyone else's opinions as well. Anybody? Would we invite Elizabeth's commentary then? Everyone okay with that? Okay. All right. Elizabeth, yeah, we can go ahead and
Great.
You're back in.
Elizabeth, you're back on with the board.
You were just discussing what the Historical Review Board knew about in 1990. So I'm reading from their inventory. Quote, little or no information is available on these individuals. Close quote. That means they didn't know about these individuals.
Could you give me a page reference number? I would love to follow along with you.
11.
Okay. So the question then is whether the fact that the Historic Review Board at the time were for the split being aware of Lucy and Omer Shockley and Carl Schutte,
Marshall,
whether they...
It listed their names and then it said that sentence that it knew nothing about them.
Right. And so I guess, okay, that's a good point. Thank you for sharing it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, let's see here.
Mike appears to have his hand raised and be bouncing back and forth quite anxiously.
Did you like that?
I did.
Up and down.
Caught my eye.
I just think we've about beat it to death and we probably need to come to some kind of decision.
Yeah, agreed. So I think I'm going to close the doors completely for public comment. Just so we can deliberate, make our decision and move forward. Does that sound fair for everyone in the room, including our public realm? It's just partially just an official gesture and to kind of cut it off here. Is that good? Okay, great. Okay, so for opinions from everyone else, where do we want to make, do you want to proceed with a movement or suggestion moving forward? To remove, how about this? Does everyone feel that we should proceed with what was with the recommendation of removing the overlay on the site?
So you want a show of hands?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's just do a show of hands and, you know.
Yeah, I'll start. I've heard all the testimony, I've heard all the aspects and everything, and I really, really, really appreciate Elizabeth and Barry's presentations and comments. Very constructive, very helpful. In the end, I think the fact that Elizabeth has shown light on previous owners and going back in history is great, and probably in 1990, if they'd have known more about that, it might have bumped the score up slightly. I don't think it bumps it up enough at this point to have made it qualify for historic overlay today. So my vote would be in favor of recommending to the county commissioners that the overlay be removed. It pains me to say that, but that's my vote.
Thank you. And Howard, do you want to add any additional comments or?
Well, just kind of a comment, you know, we're kind of getting way off of what we're supposed to be doing, but number one, it is a historic landmark. There's no question of that. And it has a great history. And the house is pretty solid. It could be rebuilt, but is the owner going to put out $100,000 to rebuild it? And secondly, what are they going to do with it if they do? And as Michael said, we've heard nothing to that degree. So it's kind of a moot point where we're going if the owner doesn't want to rebuild it and it's just going to keep deteriorating, then it, there's no point to it really anyway, and there isn't much choice.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the county is pretty limited what they can do, as Anthony said. Oregon City has a law that if you let a historic house deter on purpose, they will come in and lean it and fix it. So, you know, we need that teeth. We have no teeth. But, you know, I vote to take it away because it could be saved, but it's not going to, and that's kind of the way it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
I concur. It makes me really sad, too. I feel like I really appreciate the public comments tonight, and I think they were very persuasive. I guess I come at this pretty much from the same point each time we have our meetings. I don't think we can ask landowners or homeowners to put out such a huge amount of money without some sort of compensation. I just think it's a huge burden. I heard the comment that they were a developer. They could probably afford it, but I feel like we as a board have to be consistent with our expectations of the homeowners or landowners across the board. You know, it doesn't really matter who it is that's asking. Our response needs to be sensitive to that piece. So I concur, and I appreciate again, Anthony, thank you for all your hard work on this and the wonderful testimony we got tonight.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Megan. Yeah, and I completely 100% agree with everything that Michael Howard and Megan have stated. It's a continual conversation we have at every meeting of, you know, exploring what our zoning currently states and our codes currently state to protect those historic structures and the maintenance and maintaining them, because this is something that we're seeing right now, and we just don't have leverage over it. And so at every meeting, we always ask, is there something we can do to make a change? And, you know, and I know Anthony's been asking in many different ways how we can possibly make that happen. And it comes down to Clackamas County priorities. You know, somehow, some way, we need this to become a priority. So until then, we can only work with what we have and what teeth we can, you know, what we can really chew on right now and to make things happen, to make things stick. So with that note, I also agree that the historic overlay agree that the overlay should be removed from the site then at this point.
Well, I will put together a recommendation document to the Board of County Commissioners to that effect. Mike, I see your hand is up, so I don't want to.
Yeah, I just want to address Elizabeth and Barry. Thank you guys so much. My empathy is I'm on your side. I'm with you on this. My advice at this stage would be, as a last-ditch effort, to rally your community and attempt to reach out to the property owner to see if there's some way that either he would be willing to restore it or set it aside on one of the a part of the property, if that's what's going to happen, or rally the community to try and get those structures moved. I don't know how movable the water tower is, but the house and the cellar could probably be moved. The cellar's on concrete. The house looks like it's on concrete foundation. So it's conceivable it could be done. but it would take a huge community effort rallying together to, and persuading the homeowner, the property owner, to do that. So that's my advice at this stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe someone needs a new root cellar.
So I would just note that the next step for this particular application in the process is to go before the Board of County Commissioners for their review and decision. So I meant to have that, see if I had that date on my calendar already before we get together. So, January 26th is the date that this will is currently scheduled for the January 26th board hearing. So, that is the next step in the process.
Will you be letting us know when that's, is that going to be at a policy session?
It's January 26th at 10 a.m., so I believe that would be it.
Well, at least those are videotaped.
They are. I think they're even live streamed.
Yeah, well, I'd like to at least know about it ahead of time. I need reminders.
Sure.
I'm old.
I need reminders. I'm old. Or not than you, but sorry, Mike. Before we part ways for the evening, I would just note I haven't asked Darcy to send out the request yet. But for the board members with us this evening, I do have two applications in the door that I'm planning on putting before you in December. So that would be December 16th, would be the date on that. So just flag that. Look for information from Darcy. I can provisionally kind of preliminarily tell you that it is, one is actually the listing and nomination of a site in Clackamas County as a new Clackamas County historic landmark. Yes, Mike, I knew I was saving that. I knew that was the face you were going to make.
I am in shock. That never happens.
It very rarely happens. And the second is some reconstruction and rehabilitation of a building that had some significant damage during the ice storm. I've seen the drawings for it, and I haven't, you know, evaluated them formally yet, but they look pretty good.
I vote on Gigi's.
Gigi's.
Never mind.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think on that note, I will thank everyone for spending the time with us this evening. Looks like our members of the public have already left the attendee areas, which is too bad.
I was just thinking we could have plugged to see if Elizabeth wanted to join the board.
Yeah, we
she's
engaged. I'll have to see when we next have a vacancy coming up.
Yeah,
she's engaged and she's gone.
And she's well, but you know what? Some of our best board members have been previous people before the board, either as applicants, or as members.
We like to recruit.
Right, exactly. All right, well, I know it's gotten pretty late, so thanks, everyone, for the time and for your diligent efforts on this. I appreciate it.
Thank you all for your time.
Have a really great Thanksgiving, be well, be safe, and I'll look forward to speaking with y'all down the road.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, y'all. Take care.
Yeah.